And good morning. You're listening to People Rise Up on your community radio station, KBOO. My name is Andrew Geller, and this morning we are going to be discussing the Central American Free Trade Agreement, which we're going to hereafter refer to as CAFTA. It might sound a little familiar to some of you folks, much like NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. And CAFTA is really an expansion of NAFTA in both geography and scope, incorporating many aspects of the failed multilateral agreement on investment and other provisions that folks in government and business would like to see aspects of NAFTA applied to new sectors like services and finance, etc. Joining me this morning are both Jason Wallach, who's the coordinator of the Cross-Border Labor Organizing Coalition, and Shizuku Hashimoto, who is a volunteer with CBLOC. Good morning to you both.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks, good. Andrew.
Yeah, thanks for joining me here.
Yeah.
So now, CAFTA is it refers to Central America, but there's actually only five countries in Central America and the Dominican Republic added in a little bit after the fact. The agreement was signed by the U.S., El Salvador, Nicaragua, Guatemala, Honduras, and Costa Rica about a year ago, and the Dominican Republic was added late last year. So the process is now that each country's legislative body needs to approve the agreement and whatever implementing legislation is required to make it fall in force. El Salvador was the first country to, ratify is not quite the right word, but to approve it legislatively. Mm-hmm. Have other countries already approved? Have other countries' legislative bodies already approved this?
Yeah. Like you said, El Salvador passed it last, I think it was December 17th, so about 4 or 5 months ago. And then Honduras came in the beginning of the year, and then Guatemala passed it last month. And, one of the indicating factors about whether, this agreement could bring democracy to a place when in the Guatemalan legislature, the vote was 126-12. Despite the fact that polls in Guatemala showed that, 50 up to 70% of the people were opposed to CAFTA, and one third of the people who were polled didn't even know what CAFTA was. So, when you talk about democracy, you're talking about basically the landed elite within these countries voting to approve this stuff.
Well, and in that and many other ways, it's very similar to the process through which NAFTA was approved, implemented, designed, etc., as well as it seems all trade agreements. I mean, that's kind of a unfortunate aspect of a lot of government these days, is it sort of an insular circle and doesn't really put ideas out to the public in the the crafting stage. So three of the countries have approved it.
Right.
The U.S. is one that has not, and I've seen differences of opinion as to when a vote is going to happen. I've seen it written that as early as May. When we spoke yesterday, you said that was highly unlikely and that it would probably be like July at soonest because it's just at the committee stage here domestically. Which committees in the House and Senate would that be going to? Do you know offhand?
It's already gone to the Senate Finance Committee or gone through the Senate Finance Committee. That occurred on April 13th. And then it went into the Congress, the Ways and Means Committee. That happened just this past week on April 21st.
So the House Ways and Means.
House Ways and Means, sorry. Okay. Excuse me.
And so there's no House Finance? That's kind of the companion committee in the House?
Ways and Means is that.
Okay.
I mean, one thing should be clear here is that, CAFTA is we should talk about why it's bad, first of all, but just in terms of the legislative piece is that Bush, CAFTA is on fast track. So as soon as Bush puts in CAFTA, That starts what, like a 60-day clock ticking,
and I think it's actually 90.
It's okay, a 90-day clock, which needs basically CAFTA needs to be passed by unamended by an up or down vote within those 90 days of submission. And Bush doesn't have those votes right now, because we've built a powerful movement throughout this country that opposes this stuff, and this is despite a vast, you know, Republican majority in the U.S. House. Bush doesn't have the vote, so he hasn't put the legislation in for CAFTA. So all of this stuff that's happening in Congress is really kind of like the canary in the coal mine. Like, what's going to happen if we start talking about this?
Now, let's just talk about Fast Track for a minute, because it's extraordinarily key to CAFTA and theoretically the FTAA, if that ever comes around. Mm-hmm. What is Fast Track?
Fast Track is legislation that, and actually what happened was NAFTA was fast-tracked. And it's interesting because fast-tracked is used for a lot of trade agreements, because a lot of what will happen is a lot of states will say, oh, this trade agreement is good for me in this way, but not this way. And so there's a lot of, I would call it democracy occurring around these trade agreements. But the president does not want that to happen. So fast-track is you take the bill unamended. You vote up or you vote down. There's no way to amend the language of the bill. And so what's happened was that's what occurred with NAFTA. And then the funny thing is the process of fast tracking. How did it work? It only had to be voted out instead of revoting NAFTA, revoting fast track in. The vote was to stop using Fast Track. So it passed very easily, and Fast Track is what's being used for CAFTA as well.
So it's like opt-in versus opt-out idea.
Right, right.
In reading for the show, I saw that back in 2002, Fast Track was approved by a single vote. And it's important to note that in the Senate, both Ron Wyden and Gordon Smith voted for it. Mm-hmm. So had one of them decided not to vote for Fast Track, we would not have that authority given to George W. Bush.
Well, actually, just a clarification on that. That Smith and Wyden are in the Senate. The Senate overwhelmingly passed Fast Track. I think it was,
So it was a single vote in the House.
Yeah,
then.
And okay. That. But what is ironic about that to note is that that vote was Jim DeMint's vote in South Carolina. Jim DeMint represents textile manufacturers, a textile manufacturing district there. And basically, his vote on Fast Track was kind of purchased with the idea that textile manufacturers would benefit from any future trade agreements. And what's ironic now is that there is no chance at this point. Textile manufacturing in the United States will lose big from CAFTA, from producers, especially Chinese producers, trying to kind of utilize access to the United States market through Central America. Now, Jim DeMint basically was told, well, look, you vote for Fast Track, you're going to get all this textile stuff. It didn't happen. And now we're seeing a huge opposition from textile state Republicans against CAFTA. They will not be bought into this.
People have really learned their lesson from NAFTA. And it's funny that they're pushing so strongly. And part of the opposition is because people have seen how flawed and how failed the NAFTA model is. And CAFTA is just, this, as you said before, the same thing with even more problematic.
Well, let's, before we get into the heart of why CAFTA would be a bad idea, doesn't the, you referenced textiles, doesn't the elimination of the multi-fiber agreement or the quotas regarding textiles that happened at the first of the year kind of make irrelevant any provisions in CAFTA having to deal with textiles? Because even folks who went to maquilas during the 90s and the first few years of this century, they're all threatening to leave the maquilas down in Mexico and Central America and just say, well, we're going to China. So it's like the same thing that happened to the U.S. textile folks are now happening to the textile producers down in south of the U.S.
Well, I mean, it's a little more complex than that. But along the Mexican border, you are seeing a large amount of textile producers fleeing the border region. A lot of them are going further deep into Mexico where wages are cheaper. Some of them are going to Central America. There are actually advantages from a capitalist standpoint of using the locality of Central America to access the U.S. market. So what some of the proponents of CAFTA would say is like, well, hey, you know, we need to promote a business environment that allows Central American textile producers to have access to the U.S. market. And they want to do that. They say they're doing that through CAFTA, which isn't really true. But and a lot of opposition now is saying, well, you know, what's to stop a Chinese corporation from opening up a subsidiary in Central America and using their access from Central America to access the U.S. market?
Now, CAFTA is often described as, NAFTA in a new region and with some new parts to it, stuff they couldn't include in NAFTA, they're trying to include in CAFTA and the FTAA.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we, given that, we've got half the show left here and we couldn't possibly delve into all the aspects of CAFTA, why don't we start out by looking at problems with CAFTA related to labor and workers?
Okay. That's a big subject.
Well, so. I know. I mean, that's kind of how some of this goes is, you look at labor or health or the environment or women's rights. And how would CAFTA negatively impact, if it would, workers here in the U.S.? And although it's not necessarily fair to look at Central America as a unit with the five different countries into the Dominican Republic, but let's look at why it wouldn't work out well for labor down in Central America as well.
Yeah, okay. I mean, basically, the answer is in the NAFTA, the NAFTA experience with Mexico. Over the past 10 years, since 1994, when NAFTA began, the U.S. has seen a drain of 900. We've watched corporate America shift 900,000 manufacturing jobs from the U.S. Into Mexico and Canada. Now, why were they able to do that? Because NAFTA set up the ability to import or export into Mexico manufacturing equipment, all this other stuff. They got huge tax breaks. The World Bank created loan guarantees for municipalities that promoted free trade zones and infrastructure building. So there's an entire capitalist financial infrastructure was set to basically utilize cheap Mexican labor. The average wage in Mexico is about $4 to $5 a day in the maquilas or in the sweatshop jobs. These jobs are fly-by-night jobs. There are no guarantees that your factory will be there the next day. And so when we talk about 900,000 jobs lost in the U.S., what we're really saying is it's 900,000 jobs here, but those aren't the same jobs when they get to Mexico. They're degraded jobs. They're jobs that don't pay, that don't have benefits, that don't have any guarantees, that don't pay retirement plans and stuff like that. So, and this is exactly the model they want to extend.
And if you're talking about jobs in the United States, a lot of workers are being faced with the following scenario. They go into they're part of a union. They go into bargain with the management. The management says, look, you'll take these cuts or we'll take your job to Mexico. And that's the process that you're talking about. Why, how does NAFTA or how would CAFTA negatively impact jobs in the United States? Well, people are being threatened with outsourcing of their jobs to take cuts in their benefits, to take cuts in their labor organizing, labor rights. And as far as CAFTA goes, the language is that there will be nothing done to increase labor and environmental regulations in the countries. The only thing that needs to happen under CAFTA is the implementation of the current labor and environmental rights in the CAFTA countries.
Which aren't even enforced.
And it's not that they don't have great labor laws, but they aren't enforced. And the fact that all of these multinational corporations are going to be opening up shop, that they have all of this capital, that's just going to make the process worse, because they're all of a sudden working outside the government and are, I would say, not as accountable to the government and to the people for upholding labor laws.
I mean, one of the things that we've done through C-Block and PCASC here in Portland is invite the people who are struggling for workers' rights, you know, on the front lines within El Salvador, within Mexico, to come to Portland and have folks talk and share their experiences in the region. And I remember the words of Carmelina Contreras, who's the general secretary of the telecommunications workers in El Salvador. And she gave a passionate story about how the workers in her industry have been privatized. The privatization brought a huge downsizing from about 2,900 workers to about 600 workers in the course of a few years. And they took away the benefit package that people had. They just changed the entire entire retirement scheme in the country. Workers are losing huge amounts of money, and this is going straight to the coffers of the corporate sponsors that support these agreements.
And this information is really necessary to dispel the myth that free trade brings development, because it doesn't. Because we see and we hear from workers coming from countries that free trade is ruining their economies, ruining their livelihoods, increasing the poverty, because what little they have is being basically taken away and goes directly into, as Jason said, the coffers of these big multinational corporations.
Yeah, the idea that these agreements promote free trade is really, according to or quoting Mike Weisbrot from the Center for Economic and Policy Research in an op-ed a few days ago, really more like a marketing slogan. And, you know, free trade is really corporate managed trade. There's nothing, you know, free, and, you know, everybody gets the same crack at things. You're listening to People Rise Up on KBOO in Portland. My guests are Jason Wallach and Shizuku Hashimoto from the Cross Border Labor Organizing Coalition here in Portland. We're discussing the Central American Free Trade Agreement. They are hosting an event next Monday, May 2nd, at the University of Portland at 8:30 a.m. sharp, as they say, coinciding...
Get there before that.
right. Coinciding with a forum that Representative Earl Blumenauer and Senator Gordon Smith, both of Oregon, are holding regarding trade and globalization. So there's an opportunity for you to voice your opinion about free trade, CAFTA in specific, and you can find out more about PCASC online at pcasc.net. And at the People Rise Up website at kboo.fm, there's also a whole bunch of information about CAFTA, both from opponents and proponents, as well as some links regarding current news related to CAFTA, which will only increase as the vote gets closer. So why don't we talk about another area that is really important in the context of any trade agreement, and that being agriculture, because there's a whole lot of folks there's a lot of folks around the world, and it's very removed from our daily experience here in the States, who live on the land and grow their food that they eat. And there's significant portions of several of the economies involved in this CAFTA agreement where, it's subsistence farming. I believe, anywhere from a third up in terms of the employment. So, based on the experience with NAFTA, what do you think CAFTA would do in terms of agriculture and subsistence farming down in the Central American countries involved?
Well, again, NAFTA basically was a giveaway, a corporate giveaway, from small farmers to huge multinational agricultural corporations like Cargill, Monsanto, etc., Archer Daniels Midland. These corporations benefited hugely. How? by reducing the tariffs on corn into the Mexican market. Now, Mexico had protected its corn market out of a sense of historic and historic duty and the heritage that corn has in Mexico. You know, Mexico is the birthplace of corn. It was cultivated there for the first time about 1,500 years ago. And there's, or I'm sorry, more like 4,000 years ago. And there's about 150 varieties of corn throughout Mexico. And Mexican corn farmers are, you know, they know how to identify soil structures, microclimates, and kind of tailor varieties of corn to these very subtle differences in geography and temperature and climate. That all was wiped out through NAFTA, because when we saw the reduction in tariffs, a huge flood of low quality yellow corn that was highly subsidized from the U.S. market was able to flood into the market and displace the producers. Now, you know, and I'm talking about small farmers, 90% of corn growers prior to NAFTA, 90% of the corn growers in Mexico farmed on plots of 10 acres or less. So we're seeing a nation of small farmers get completely washed out by the tsunami of Cargill-sponsored corn into the country.
Most of which is genetically engineered, and that's the whole issue of transgene development is, you know, important to the agriculture discussion, and we're not going to really have time to get into the details of that as well as many other aspects. Did you want to add something about agriculture, Shizuka? No?
I mean, I have a lot to say, but we only have a couple minutes.
and so given that, and again, there's a whole lot more beyond labor and agriculture in terms of potential negative impacts. There's all sorts of issues related to patents and pharmaceuticals and water and women's rights and indigenous culture. And
it would be worth it to talk about services, though. And I think...
Okay, let's do a couple of minutes about services, and then we'll just close out with a few minutes on how people above and beyond the rally can provide input regarding CAFTA.
Okay.
So as I mentioned at the front end, the Multilateral Agreement on Investment defeated back in 97-98, but the provisions, the most nasty provisions of the MAI regarding regulations on investment and services, et cetera, are being folded into agreements pretty much at every opportunity. So how does CAFTA incorporate some of those provisions?
Well, like you said, services make up about 75 to 80% of the U.S. economy. You know, we see our manufacturing base kind of waning, basically due to free trade. And so the service sector is growing. Now, services are basically anything that is done that... any work that is done that doesn't produce a product that you can drop on your foot. You know, so we're talking healthcare, education, you know, toll collectors, radio hosts, everybody who does that is a service worker. And this was actually excluded, this type of work was excluded from NAFTA because it was just so vast that how could you wrap it up into one, you know, actual agreement? But that's exactly what they're trying to do with CAFTA. I mean, they're not just expanding this geographic scope. They're expanding what is defined as a tradable good. And now services are in that. Well, many of the countries within Central America, just like our Social Security service here that's trying to be privatized, they have state-owned enterprises that address, that are not for-profit enterprises. They're there to support the public good and provide basic services that many... You know, even the UN considers a human right. We're talking about water, we're talking about electricity, energy. We're talking about, you know, El Salvador, the telecommunications industry was recently privatized. And this is all in the chopping block with CAFTA. Basically, CAFTA states clearly that anything that is what they consider a publicly run monopoly has to be opened up to... basically bidding on the open market, open capitalist market. We're opposed to this because we know that this has meant layoffs, massive job cuts, salary cuts, benefit cuts, and cuts in the actual what services are delivered.
So an increase in prices as well.
And an increase in the prices. So including services within CAFTA it's detrimental and devastating, will devastate the lives of thousands of people throughout the region.
Okay, so we've got 2 minutes left here. We mentioned real briefly the Monday morning rally, May 2nd, 8:30 sharp, which means get there at 8. University of Portland, Buckley Center. This is not Portland State University.
That's right.
University of Portland is on Willamette Boulevard above Swan Island in North Portland.
Yeah, take Lombard off of I-5.
Yeah, so above and beyond attending this, speaking to Representative Blumenauer and Senator Smith, how can folks become involved in stopping CAFTA?
Well, I just want to say, people need to be at this thing. This is basically the result. This forum that they're holding at University of Portland is the result of a lot of constituent contact of our representatives over the past couple years when CAFTA has been out here. We've tried to get these folks to talk publicly about CAFTA. They won't take positions. They try to hide behind the whole idea of free trade as being a good thing and people not really dissecting that and knowing what that is. So this is the one chance that we can actually speak publicly to our elected representatives to let them know how we as constituents feel about this. And we want people to be there. We know, and it's not a coincidence that they're putting this on Monday morning at 9 a.m., That's not, you know, they don't want to hear from us on this. They don't want our voice to be heard. So it's a challenge for us to be there, but we need to do it. Aside from that, you know, we do have a postcard campaign. We've sent postcards in. You know, the only Democrat now of the Oregon congressional delegation who hasn't declared his opposition to CAFTA is Earl Blumenauer in Oregon's 3rd District. So many people have expressed their opposition to CAFTA by writing a postcard and sending it off to him, or a letter. Also, we're looking at letters to the editor. We've been able to delay this vote for a year because of a movement that we've built throughout this country, and we want to keep that going.
Well, thank you very much, both of you, for coming on in this morning. I've been speaking with Jason Wallach and Shizuku Hashimoto, both from the Cross Border Labor Organizing Coalition. And to contact them, you can call them at 503-236-7916. And again, their website is www.pcasc.net, pcasc.net. Thanks a whole lot to both of you for coming in.
Thanks. Thank you, Andrew.
If you have comments or questions about anything you heard today or any other week on this show, you can send me an email at kboo@riseup.net. And again, the People Rise Up website at kboo.fm has a whole bunch more information about CAFTA, both on the pro and counter side, as well as news. Thanks a whole lot for listening.